The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello, and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. On Saturday, May 31st, the Big Cities Health Coalition and Vital Strategies convened a panel of public health and harm reduction experts to present new national polling data and spotlight the latest stories from the front lines of community building and harm reduction, including the official unveiling of the buyla4la.org website. The panel was entitled Progress in a Crisis: Stories and Data on Harm Reduction from the Front Lines of Overdose Response. Last week, we heard presentations by two of the speakers, Chrissy Giuliano from Big Cities Health Coalition and Dr. Brian Hurley with the L.A. County Department of Public Health. This week, we hear presentations from the other three speakers. In a moment, we'll hear from Veronica Lewis with Homeless Outreach Program Integrated Care System, or HOPICS, and from Shoshana Scholar with the L.A. County Department of Health Services. Now, let's hear from Estefania Valladolid, Harm Reduction Outreach Specialist and Educator with Bienestar Human Services.
I'm Estefania. I go by Steph, and I work at Bienestar as a harm reduction outreach worker. I've been there about 9 months now. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about my story and where I come from and what led me to do the work that I do now. So I grew up in the borderline of Compton and Long Beach, where gang-related violence is very normal, drugs is very normal, and of course, my home life added to that journey as well. So that combined together just added to my mental and emotional struggles, leading me to seek an escape through substances and alcohol at the age of 14. I became pregnant at 14. I lost my baby at 15 due to the complications that related to all of this party life, I would say. It's so glamorized at that age, and you don't realize the impact that it causes in the long run. So I tried to mask the pain for about 3 years. I left my home because it was very embarrassing to be around my family and using. So I felt like I needed to remove myself from that, and I left my home at the age of 15. And I was living in cars, friends' homes, sometimes under the bridge. And I had a partner back then that was also adding to that. So it was just the wrong group of people. And after 3 years of missing school, obviously I wasn't going to school, I returned and I earned my GED. I decided that I was gonna turn my life around after I lost my baby, because I was just not gonna go anywhere. It was just making it worse for me and my family. I missed my family, I missed my home life. Even though it wasn't perfect, no one is perfect. I'm a mother myself, I'm not perfect. And I didn't wanna keep resenting my parents and putting the blame on them. So I went back and I was able to turn my life around. 15 years later from that, I found my purpose through volunteering at a church, helping individuals facing homelessness. Because I was in that position, I decided to volunteer. And miraculously, after finding my purpose, I was introduced to a WERC work program that certified me in behavioral health, and I received my certification through them, focusing on harm reduction. And I knew from that moment on that was going to be my life purpose, my journey, and I was going to start changing people's life around, because I didn't have a support system growing up at 14. I didn't have harm reduction, and now I'm able to be that person that I needed when I had no one. And so now, working with Bienestar, I outreach, street outreach 2 times a week, and office outreach as well, where I educate my community about Narcan, about the safety and the importance of safe using, because we're using. We just have to do it safe. We all eat sugar, knowing that we can get diabetes, why not do it safe? So it's the same concept. And leaving a door open for individuals who don't have a home themselves. I was able to go back home. I was able to turn my life around because I did have a support system at the end of it. Some people don't. Some people are in the street with no one but us, the outreach workers. And so we leave that door open for whenever they're ready to cross it themselves by providing these services every single day. I have a participant who after, I want to say, 3 years of reaching out and going to our location religiously every week, asking for these supplies, Narcan and the pipes and the fentanyl testing strips. After 3 years, they finally decided that they wanted to take the next step to recovery. So I truly believe that harm reduction is the gateway to recovery and for a better life. Yeah.
That was Estefania Valladolid, Harm Reduction Outreach Specialist Educator with Bienestar Human Services, speaking on a panel entitled Progress in a Crisis, Stories and Data on Harm Reduction from the Front Lines of Overdose Response, which was held May 31st to present new national polling data and to spotlight the latest stories from the front lines of community building and harm reduction, including the unveiling of the BuyLA4LA.org website. Another speaker on that panel was Veronica Lewis, Executive Director of Homeless Outreach Program Integrated Care System, or HOPIX.
Veronica Lewis, HOPIX stands for Homeless Outreach Program Integrated Care System, and we've been around for 37 years. I'm the director of HOPIX, and we sit at the intersection of many of the systems that folks that we're talking about are a part of, are impacted by. And so we are one of the largest homeless and housing service providers in Los Angeles County, inclusive of everything from outreach to permanent housing, keeping over 1,500 people off the street every night in interim housing, including 200 to 300 children. And we also are a behavioral health provider, doing all varieties of substance use support for people who are using drugs, as well as mental health and trauma related services. And we're a reentry provider. And so you see what I mean when I say we literally sit at the intersection of the different systems that many of the people that we're talking about that we are connecting with to provide harm reduction support are a part of. And so our organization was founded by somebody who was living on Skid Row related to substance use. And this was at the height of when Skid Row was becoming what we know it to be. And he started to go to the meetings and realized the city and county didn't understand how to engage folks. And so HOPIX was HOP initially, Homeless Outreach Program. And it started with people who were very recently formerly homeless, including the founder, walking the streets of Skid Row, giving information and resources in a way that people would be willing to receive them, right? Because they understood the perspective. And even before, the formal harm reduction programs we have now, late 80s, early 90s, our founder, Mike Neely, and the folks around here were walking around giving out bleach kits, right, and other things because of just the disparities related to, at the time, what was developing into the HIV/AIDS crisis and some of the other things related to folks that were using drugs intravenously. And so we are not new to harm reduction, but our recent journey, I'll call it, of harm reduction really began to formally structure the robust program we have now in partnership with the Department of Public Health, SAPC, and the Department of Health Services began about 6 to 8 years ago because some of you may have heard of the multidisciplinary teams that are out in the streets every day trying to stop people from dying, quite frankly, right, who are living outdoors. And they're made up of a variety of specialties, including a substance use counselor. And we were tired of seeing people die. We were tired of engaging folks, going back and seeing that they had passed away. In many cases due to a fatal overdose. And so it started with Oscar, who oversees the program now, just reaching out to different folks, trying to get some in-kind donations, right? Trying to get naloxone, trying to get different things. And at the same time, resources were coming to our county health departments, right, to really be able to stand up a full harm reduction program. And so it's blossomed, but that's where it started. And I think that what's critical about the way we're approaching it is multifaceted, right? And so we do have our harm reduction outreach teams who are made up of people that are in recovery themselves, some very recently beginning or restarting their recovery journeys. So we do outreach. So we're at over 40 encampments frequently, over 40 encampments in primarily South LA, Compton, and surrounding areas, providing supports and literally just trying to give people what they need. We also, what many people don't realize is when people do come indoors sometimes, especially if they're in their own room or they have their own unit, if it's permanent housing, that isolation leads to increases in overdoses. And so in addition to the outreach component, we also are indoors. So some of you have heard of the Inside Safe or other special encampment projects where folks are going into motels. Our harm reduction teams are doing an active engagement to try to make sure we don't have fatalities increase as people come indoors. Even when people are permanently housed, we're doing active engagement. The third prong is related to like just training, right? And so we are very deeply rooted in the homeless and housing sector, but there's still not a lot of understanding or even buy-in related to harm reduction at all different interventions related to addressing somebody's housing crisis. And so really building the momentum in particular in our region to try to educate and help people understand and begin to incorporate and institutionalize harm reduction as an approach and principle, not just related to drugs, but related to a variety of things, quite frankly, is a key part of what we do. In addition to, you know, just continuing to champion it, right, and tell the stories to get broader folks around LA County to understand what's going on. And so I think that, you know, one of the things that is critical and that we've had success with, these multidisciplinary teams have been on the street. Hoppix has been doing outreach forever. I told you that's our start, right? And before it was just giving out water and sandwich, right? And it's expanded, thankfully, and we've progressed to really meet people where they are and try to humanize the fact that these are individuals that we're talking about and trying to build rapport and do whatever it takes, right, to stop them from dying and build rapport so that we can ultimately, hopefully, get them off of the street. But many of the folks who are actively engaged in using drugs would not even talk to our outreach teams. They wouldn't talk to them. When we began to have harm reduction focused workers who were literally there to provide support, have real conversations, which is something that doesn't happen across many sectors, about drug use, right, without any judgment, provide the supplies and materials, have conversations about possible alternatives in terms of making sure that maybe there's a safer way to consume drugs. People started to engage with us that had never talked to us. People started to get housed, because if they wouldn't talk to us, that means we couldn't even house them, right? And even though the purpose of harm reduction is on the spectrum, as Dr. Hurley said, right, is one of the ways we support people who use drugs. Even though the intention is not to get people into treatment, because of meaningful relationships and the fact that people cared about them and the fact that people were willing to have real conversations about drug use, not about you shouldn't do it, but about like, tell me what you're doing so we can have conversations around how to keep you safe. A lot of people we've seen go into treatment, right? And this is not the first. You all understand just the attrition rates and the fact that cycle in and out because recovery is a journey, as you've heard. But many people have attached to treatment because of our initial engagement and stayed there, right? And we literally, you know, in my all team meetings, we have client success stories. And just a few weeks ago, somebody told us that it had been months. And they literally picked this person up off the ground because she was just so challenged but wanted to go. She wanted to change her life, delivered her to treatment, and are constantly checking up on her. It's a different level of engagement that is non-judgmental and it just says, this is where you are in your journey. We're going to meet you where you are. We don't believe you should die just because you're using drugs. So we're going to provide support to you in the way that we can. And whatever progress looks like to you, we'll be there to support it. I mean, if I ask you all the question, how many of you have been told to do something by your physicians before? All right. How many of you have not followed instructions? How many of you feel like nobody should support you and love you and that you shouldn't have a safe and stable place to live because you didn't follow those instructions? That's what we're doing. That's what we're doing. That's all we're doing. We know there's lots of people that are experts and people have experience, and lots of people, including your medical provider, can tell you what to do, or your friends and family. But the reality is you still deserve to be loved and supported and deserve a safe place to live, even if you are not ready or not interested, right? That is at the core of what we're doing. That's the essence of what we're doing. And I'll give you another story, and then I'm going to share some numbers and then talk a little bit about some of the other reasons why harm reduction is so important related to some of the disparities. So we outsourced our janitorial services because we have a lot of different buildings. And Oscar, who again is the reason why Hoppix is doing all this now, was walking through the hallway and he said, "You look familiar." And she said, "I was living on the street I was actively using your harm reduction team engaged me, and through a series of things, now I'm housed and now I'm working for this company, right? You talk about full circle moment. You're servicing our, and she, you know, we didn't know because we don't have anything to do with how what the company does in terms of their recruitment practices. But there are so many of those stories. There are so many stories of reunifying with family members, reunifying with people's children. And I think that people just need to know that they're going to be loved and supported based on whatever they care about in that moment. And that is what we're doing. You know, there's a Christy shared a little bit of information, but obviously the other thing is, you know, there are some disparities in terms of fatal deaths. The data, like the formal data that's really being used, I think Dr. Hurley referred to some of this from 2016 to 2023, it showed that Black people have the highest fatalities and overdoses, right? Followed by white people and then brown folks after that. But there's a lot of other health outcomes that are impacted because let's just be honest. Overdoses don't just happen to people who are living outdoors. They don't just happen to people who are poor. But some of the complexities, if you don't have access to resources, compound the health issues, compound the other barriers that you face. And so the other thing we're doing is trying to address that, right, for folks who are already dealing with compounding issues, dealing with other inequities and disparities related to other systems, employment, housing, education, you name it. You go down the list, right, overrepresentation and incarceration. I think you all understand it. And so it also allows us to address some of the inequities. And, you know, it was mentioned in the first presentation, even how people of color, Black and brown people in particular, are treated differently from other groups that use drugs. I just had the honor of presenting to the Judicial Council. You know, that's the body who oversees and sets policies for the judicial branch for the state of California. Because for the last 3 years, we've been working on this racial equity piece because it shows that the collaborative court to drug courts, essentially where for your crime related to drug use, you can be put back into the community to get treated in the community as opposed to incarceration. When numbers nationally and statewide show us very clearly that Black and brown folks don't have access to those alternatives. They have access to them at a much lower rate than white people who have the same crimes or similar crimes who are having the opportunity to be treated in the community as opposed to being sent to jail or prison. And so unanimously, myself and an appellate judge from Alameda County got a vote from the Judicial Council to move forward racial equity work in collaborative courts to even address that in terms of how people are being dealt with for the similar crimes of using drugs. So there's a lot of work to do, and our work is centered in just the humanity of people and addressing some of the inequities and stopping people from dying while they're still choosing to use drugs. So I'll end with sharing a few numbers. And so HOPICS is one of many of organizations that are working with the health and public health departments to see this work through. I forgot to mention earlier also, we're one of the first 3 harm reduction drop-in centers in Los Angeles County as well, and we're very proud of that. But I'll give you a few numbers just from this current fiscal year, from July 1st, 2024, to April 2025. Here's some of the highlights in terms of some of the support and investment in harm reduction that HOPICS has been able to do. We've had over 24,000 encounters with folks, primarily in encampments, some of them in interim housing. We've given out over 340,000 needles, and because of the distribution of well over 20,000 Narcan vessels, we have helped stop or reverse 548 overdoses. So that means potentially 548 lives saved. And you know, because we're trying to be great community partners, we don't just give the needles out, we collect them. We've collected over 15,000 needles and done over 700 screenings, right? And so this work really matters. There's lots of conversations around what it means to support people who use drugs. But again, whenever you have a conversation with somebody or get frustrated yourself, remember the question I asked you about your following instructions or the guidance of an expert and your the fact that you're not doing it or not interested in doing it, what that should mean for you. Just think about that. Think about that question that I posed to you as you're having conversations and hopefully championing what we're doing. Thank you. Yeah.
That was Veronica Lewis, Executive Director of HOPIX, speaking on a panel entitled Progress in a Crisis, Stories and Data on Harm Reduction from the Front Lines of Overdose Response, which was held May 31st to present new national polling data and to spotlight the latest stories from the front lines of community building and harm reduction, including the unveiling of the BuyLA4LA.org website. We'll hear more in a moment. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Another speaker on that panel was Shoshana Scholar, Harm Reduction Director at the LA County Department of Health Services.
So we see the harm reduction work is really hand in hand with direct patient care that people receive when they go to our hospitals, when they go to, they receive health care in the jails. And it's the same people that we find circulating throughout these. We also have an office that's housing for health. And the idea there is you get the most medically vulnerable people and prioritize them for housing. So that's our that's sort of where we sit in there. This work comes out of the Office of Diversion and Reentry. And when we, like, a lot of the harm reduction work that's grown here in Los Angeles County was not directly out of the HIV/AIDS services world, which is pretty unusual, because most of the country, that was where it was all seeded and grew from, was from abolitionists and justice reform advocates that helped create a moment where the county started looking at sort of what we needed to do to shut down our most horrible jail, Men's Central Jail. And what we needed to do was we developed a Care First, Jail Last policy. And a key component of decarceration is building out a harm reduction infrastructure that can grab folks who are most at risk of overdose, which is those folks leaving jail. All right, cool. I wasn't sure what I was being singled about. It was really critical that we, like, these things all kind of work together, and that's what fueled, like, a pretty large expansion that started with an investment around 2020 and really has developed and a lot, like, backfilled a lot of infrastructure that wasn't there. So I just wanted you to know that background. So I came to this work 25 years ago. Back then, it wasn't part of public health conversations. We were activists, drug users, artists, volunteers. That's really like the roots of who did it here in LA and in a lot of parts across the country. People were working with backpacks, in alleys and shelters. That was really, really common here in LA, was a lot of alleys and trying to hide around corners from cops. So standing here today, I'm really reminded as how far we've come and how much further we still need to go. So we've made real progress in understanding addiction as a chronic disease, and Brian spoke really clearly to that. We've seen that harm reduction works when it's part of a public health system. And that sort of came as a surprise to me as somebody who was sitting outside of it for so long. Understanding the value of integrating and making space for it in a public health system with a continuum of supported or resource services. That's why our collaboration has been critical. It's also like not built, we're supposed to be competing with each other for resources. That's how our health departments work. And we have insisted that we are a harm reduction initiative and our money is joint and we make decisions together about how to invest and how to support the programs. And we've really done all of this with a deep accountability to the people who receive services, and an approach that's rooted in care and connection and prioritizes keeping people alive and safe. So we are still obviously in the middle of a devastating overdose crisis. 40% of Americans know someone who has died of an overdose, which is just like, I said that to my kid this morning. It's like, it's just 15 years ago, this would be unfathomable to us. And from where we're sitting now, it's just been this rolling crisis that has changed the way we look at things, and it's still like 40% of people. But here's the hopeful part. We already talked about overdose starting to decline nationally and locally, and it is really the result of relentless harm reduction efforts, not exclusively, but that, like, for a very long time, our harm reduction programs, without the resources invested in them, have been saving lives and providing, like, a backbone of our first responder services, particularly when they took up doing overdose prevention and distributing naloxone. But even with this progress, our work's under threat. Public health is being politicized, and then there's so much language, return to drug criminalization. In California, we've lost all but one of our progressive prosecutors. There were laws that were passed last year, mid-December, that recriminalized or changed the sentences for some of these things that had become misdemeanors. Like, the shift is so palpable, and the pushback post-COVID on encampments and homeless people and all the criminalization of people who are living outside. Like, there's just, we're in a really not great moment here, and it's so critical that we double down on our harm reduction investment. We know that criminalization does not solve an overdose crisis. We know it creates health problems and, like, community problems. It's just devastating, and we are really at that moment where we need to keep an eye on it, and we need to be talking across jurisdictions, and we need to figure out strategies together to safeguard this work. So the good news here in LA is that we are seeing a real investment in harm reduction. So that abolitionist and justice reform stuff was connected with, so there was the George Floyd protests really did kick off a big impact public conversation here that turned into the passage of the Measure J, which is a funding source. And so what they, like, through this, so creating a process that highlighted harm reduction as a necessary part of decarceration, that Measure J funding has been allocated to harm reduction in a way other dollars were not previously. And that was before the opioid settlements kicked in. And we've had something really exciting happening. It's happening June 12th, and I can't even tell you that it was, like, beyond my imagination. We are now looking at opening our Skid Row Care Campus, which is truly, truly could not have imagined. I think it's a 16,000 square foot building that has healthcare, substance use treatment, drop-in center. It was supposed to have safe consumption site, but we're waiting on that for the moment so we don't tank the whole thing. It's got like 12 showers, bathrooms outside, a big park space, and service booths. We'll have mental health supports on campus and others. And the idea is that, like, extended hours will be open from 7 a.m. to 11 p.m. People will not be kicked out of beds at the end of the day. Those beds are supervised by nurses. And we opened last Monday. Those beds are full, and those beds are full of people with really serious health needs that were not going and receiving services elsewhere. And one thing I want to share about it is that it's we made a decision to make the holders of the vision and the administrators of the campus a harm reduction organization. So Homeless Healthcare of Los Angeles has taken it on, which means our approach to safety and security is really different, and all the partners have to work with them with that frame and responding to it. And it's been a really fascinating 9 days. I hope that you come and join us on June 12th. We're going to do, you know, a big grand opening, but there'll be speakers and all the officials that were part of it. But then after that, it turns back into the thing that we designed it for. Everybody, those folks leave, and then it's going to be a big block party. We're closing off the street, barbecue music, and, like, it really is an articulated community-led vision that has come to life, and never in my life would I have been able to see a needle exchange at the heart of a project like this. And I truly believe the better we can do this, the more we'll be able to share that with the rest of the country, because that's what's needed, both to make sure that the people we're serving get the services that they need and take advantage of the other ones that are out there that they're not plugging into right now. But that's also really protective for the harm reduction programs as well. And we are very vulnerable. We end up being blown around in different waves of the criminalization and approaches to homelessness. So I don't know. There's a lot of different reasons why I'm so hopeful here, and I'm really hoping that you have a chance to see it.
That was Shoshana Scholar, Harm Reduction Director at the LA County Department of Health Services, speaking on a panel entitled Progress in a Crisis, Stories and Data on Harm Reduction from the Front Lines of Overdose Response, which was held May 31st to present new national polling data and to spotlight the latest stories from the front lines of community building and harm reduction, including the unveiling of the BuyLA4LA.org website. And for now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. This has been Century of Lies. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. Century of Lies is a volunteer production for community radio and syndicated via the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network's AudioPort service. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy and the failed war on drugs. For now, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long.
So long!
For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the Century of Lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.